Self-Coaching 101. Use your mind. Don't let it use you. By Brooke Castillo. Forward. Who the heck is Brooke Castillo?
No one ever taught me how to think. They taught me what to think and why I should think what they told me, but they never taught me how to think a thought purposefully. I never took a class in thought management. In fact, I didn't even know that managing my thoughts was an option. Later, when I went to college and studied psychology, I learned that we do have some ability to manage our thoughts. But this was only really necessary if we were suffering from some abnormal psychiatric condition that made us non-functional in the world. In other words, everything they taught me was so that I could help my patients within the medical model, not so I could help myself. I went through life, like many of my clients, thinking what I was told to think or shown by example what and how to think. I believed the recycled thoughts of my parents and their parents. My young mind's programming went unquestioned and remained mainly out of my conscious awareness through many years of suffering and negative emotion. My negative thoughts ultimately led to negative results that seemed out of my control. Now I know better. Now I know that every thought we think can be a choice we make. I now know that I can retrain my mind to think in ways that bring me positive emotion and therefore positive results. I realize that it's not just what I happen to think in any moment that will determine the outcome of my life, but what I want to think that will bring me everything I desire and more. I often say to my clients that someone should pull us aside at about age 25 and let us know that we can now stop borrowing our parents' thought patterns. They could fill us in on the truth that true adulthood is emotional adulthood, which requires that we think for ourselves. That someone for me came in the form of multiple authors. They have taught me and shown me how to become an emotionally mature adult by managing my own thinking and coaching myself into a much more abundant and positive life. I will refer to them throughout the book by first name. This is not a sign of disrespect, but rather one of familiarity and deep love for each of them. My favorite authors are Eckhart Tolle, author of The Power of Now, A New Earth, and many more. He can be found at www.eckharttolle.com. I call him Eckhart in this book. Oprah calls him a prophet. Byron Katie, author of Loving What Is, I Need Your Love, Is That True? She can be found at thework.com. I call her Katie in this book. We call her work as important as breathing. Abraham, author of Ask and It Is Given, The Law of Attraction, The Amazing Power of Deliberate Intent, The Astonishing Power of Emotions, and Money and the Law of Attraction. Abraham, along with Jerry and Esther Hicks, have the most thorough teachings of the Law of Attraction on the market through their books, tapes, and videos. I have learned so much from reading and listening to their work. I refer to them and their collective work as Abraham in this book. Their website is www.abrahamhicks.com. Jill Bulte Taylor, author of A Stroke of Insight. She is a Harvard-trained PhD who studies the brain and knows words like neurosymmetry. She is super smart, and I should probably call her Dr. Taylor, but it feels too formal. She is so loving. I want to give her a hug and call her Jill. I hope she doesn't mind. I'm sure her right brain won't. You can find her on the web by Googling Jill Bulte Taylor. Martha Beck, author of The Joy Diet, Finding Your Own North Star, and many more. She is another Harvard PhD who is scary smart, but her sick sense of humor and love of gel pens makes it impossible to call her doctor, not to mention she won't allow it. I lovingly refer to her as Martha in this book. Find out more about her at www.marthabeck.com. Tony Robbins. I know. I almost didn't include him because it's a little embarrassing to admit he's one of my most influential teachers. But there's really no denying it. If you have read Awaken the Giant Within, you know what I mean. Yes, the guy has big teeth and talks with a bit too much enthusiasm, but he's freaking brilliant when it comes down to it. He's made $1 billion in self-help. He may be salesy, but you don't make that kind of money and have his kind of staying power without substance to your work. Some of his tools are so kick-butt, we have to give Tony his due. I refer to him as Tony in this book. You can find out more about him at www.tonyrobbins.com. Pema Chodron. I love Pema. She's a Buddhist nun in Maine who teaches meditation and writes books. She is brilliant and funny and serene and uses words like bullshit on one of her meditation tapes. That was the moment I fell for her. My kind of nun. She has written so many awesome books, and you can find out more about her by Googling Pema Chodron. This is by no means a complete list. I have read many, many more books by other brilliant teachers, but if I could wave my magic wand, this is the group I would have out to dinner at Chili's. Table for eight, please, to talk about life and how our thinking determines so much of its outcome. My teachers, I have noticed, are all pretty much saying the same things. At times, when I read their works, I wonder if they all know each other and talk to each other before they write. They use different words to talk about the same things. For example, here's what each of them says on thought. Katie, there's always a particular thought that triggers any stressful feeling. Eckhart, unconscious thought alone is the cause of emotional pain. Jill, there has been nothing more empowering than the realization that I don't have to think thoughts that bring me pain. Abraham, when you think a thought that is not in vibrational alignment with your overall intent, your inner being will offer you a negative emotion. Martha, all human suffering comes from your thoughts. Tony, holding a limiting thought is the same as systematically ingesting small doses of arsenic. We don't die immediately. We start dying emotionally the moment we partake of them. And Pema, it isn't the things that happen to us in our lives that cause us to suffer. It's how we relate to the things that happen to us that causes us to suffer. I believe each of the authors and teachers I mentioned wrote from a place of individual thought. And yet, they were so tuned into the truth of the universe that they tapped it as a common brilliance. Do we all have the same access to this brilliance? I believe we do. But maybe not in the exact same ways. Katie and Eckhart both woke up one morning enlightened and never looked back. Abraham is a non-physical channeled entity. Martha has the IQ of a genius. Jill had a left hemisphere stroke, and Tony has a brain tumor that I'm convinced pushes on the brilliant part of his brain. No such luck for me. And I'm guessing not for you either. I am not enlightened nor a genius. I have had no brain abnormalities that help me detach from negative thinking. I'm just like you. I'm a mother of two who's got to get my kids to school, their homework done, and their lunches made. I write, coach, grocery shop, read, work out, and pay my bills. I have two very needy dogs. I'm not always in the present moment. I don't meditate for hours or enter nirvana when I do the dishes. I can't sit on a park bench and revel in the magnificence of the universe without hallucinogenic assistance. I don't channel non-physical entities, and I've never gotten a call from Oprah Winfrey. I drink Diet Coke, color my hair, and spend an outrageous amount of money on handbags in my car. I yell at my kids sometimes, whine to my husband, argue with my mother, and I read People magazine. Need I say more? I am a student. I benefit from these teachers and their intelligence. I find my own small piece of enlightenment, nirvana, and genius in moments of my life through study and application of these universal principles. My value add is that I can give it to you quickly. I can give you what I believe are the common truths of each of these amazing teachers. I can apply the truths they share and retell them in easy-to-understand language and get it to you fast. I always say to my accountant, please explain this to me like I'm a third grader. That is what I'm good at doing with self-help concepts. I'm good at telling you the common truths in my own simplified language. Here are my notes from what I have learned in my most recent round of self-help study and application. The ideas are not original, but the way I have packaged them is original and straight from my own brain. This information has not been presented quite in this way before, as far as I know. It has been life-changing for me to apply this one tool to my life, and it has worked for thousands of my clients and students. I first offered this material as a free class on my website, www.selfcoaching101.com, which has had thousands of students. It is still available for download on my site at www.brookcastillo.com. This audiobook will also be available on Amazon.com.
Intro. Why use this model?
Because it can change your life permanently. So, you ask, why should I read this book and use this Brooke Castillo's model? Because it works, period. If you use this model, you will become aware of your thoughts. You will become more conscious. You will become more awakened. You will discover the cause behind your negative emotions. You will have a way to feel better. In short, it looks like this. It doesn't matter what terms you use, but the part of you that thinks, your ego, your left brain, is the part of you that brings you suffering. Jill says it's a small peanut-sized part of your brain, a collection of cells, that tells stories about what is happening to you in your life. The bummer about this little peanut of neurology is that it's not always a happy storyteller. Many times, Peanut spins a tale of woe. Many times, Peanut lies and tells us horrible, untrue stories. Stories like, your thighs are too big, everyone's out to get you, you missed your chance at success, and your husband should behave differently. This chatterbox Peanut creates so much suffering that many of us spend our entire lives caught in Peanut story hell. The biggest bummer is that most of us don't even realize it's going on. No one ever took us aside in high school and said, hey, you know that voice inside your head that tells you you're ugly and not popular? That's not you. My best friend in high school asked me if I wanted to get high, not if I wanted to align with my consciousness and become aware of the thoughts that create my reality. And so I went through most of my adult life living out the unconscious thoughts of my Peanut. My guess is that you have too. My guess is that many of you still are. Even if Eckhart had pulled me out of class senior year and suggested I live a life of awakened action, I know I wouldn't have listened. I hardly listened when Tony said I could make $1 million if I monitored my thoughts. It seems so much easier to just drown them out with alcohol, drugs, sex, and food. My thoughts were painful, but I didn't know this. I thought it was my life that was painful. I didn't see that I needed to change my thoughts in my mind. I thought I needed to change my life. But as you will see from the model you learn in this book, if you change your actions and results without changing their cause, you're setting yourself up for a cycle of misery. This is why I kept losing weight and gaining it back. I never figured out why I was gaining it in the first place. It's like those lottery winners who lose all their money. They change their result, but the thoughts that were keeping them poor were more powerful. Truly, changing our thoughts is the only thing I have found that works to change our results. This is why the law of attraction is so hot right now. It is the truth. Thinking, thoughts, mind, brain, neuroscience, cognition, ego, pain body, beliefs, focus, call it whatever the heck you want. The bottom line is this. When you think a thought, you feel a feeling. When you feel a feeling, you take action or not because of how you feel. Your actions, behaviors, create your experience in the world and ultimately what your life looks like, your results. If your thoughts suck, your life is going to suck. If you aren't conscious of your negative thoughts, you're enslaved by them. I call this the spin cycle. This is the negative spin cycle of thinking. The circumstance triggers the thought that gets the cycle started. The negative thought leads to the negative feeling, then action, then result. The result caused by the original thought is now evidence for the thought and strengthens its hold on our brain patterns. And so the spin continues to get stronger and more ingrained and causes more pain. Many coaching programs and some types of modern behavioral therapies attempt to change or fix the negative spin cycle and its results by changing the actions and results without changing their cause. As you can see, this is like swimming against the current. All this really does is cause resistance and tension. The tension seeks release, and in the case of a negative spin cycle, something has to give. Either the thought must change, or the action results must change back to their original non-tension cycle. When we don't change the thought, the cause, we end up back with the same spin cycle and the same results over and over again. Instead of working against ourselves by taking action, using force, and garnering willpower, we can become conscious of the thinking causing the unwanted results in our lives. We don't need to change the direction or result of the spin cycle. We need to consciously create an entire new pattern or cycle of thought. I would love to ask the people who flew the planes into the World Trade Center what thought drove that action. They believed that thought, but did they ever question the thought? Was it a thought programmed into them and accepted without inquiry? My guess is yes. What if they had looked at their left brain thought from a right brain view? What if they had become conscious that they were not their thoughts? What type of awakened action would have stemmed from the inquiry? What cycle of thought might they have created instead? Interesting to think about. So, on the smaller scale of you and me, let's take a look at the results you're getting in your life. Is there anything you have or don't have that you want to change? Is there any way you are feeling that you don't want to feel, or something you want to feel more of? Well then, you picked up a book that can give you a pretty good start, and that start is with your thoughts. Let's change your thoughts to change your results. Let's do it with Self-Coaching 101. It's easy to understand and it's easy to use. And let's keep doing it until you have the life you want, the feelings you want, the consciousness you want. Your thoughts determine your results and your feelings. Your thoughts are created by a peanut chatterbox who's been running the show. It's time to take back the wheel. Time to take back your mind so you can use it instead of having it use you.
Chapter 1, Model Overview.
How would you feel if your husband forgot your birthday? How would you want to be able to feel? Do you realize that you have complete control over how you choose to feel? Do you know that anger is just an option? Well, Sylvia didn't. And when she called me for a session the day after her 45th birthday, the day after her husband forgot her birthday, she needed help. In this chapter, I'm going to introduce you to the model the way I introduced it to Sylvia. I will show you how I use it in my life and with my clients. This model is designed for one purpose, to change the thoughts that cause you suffering. I will start with Sylvia's example in the model to show you how to identify a negative thought and then show you a sample with the thought changed to a better feeling thought. This work was real work I did with Sylvia. Her husband had forgotten her birthday and she was seething mad. I taught her the model and showed her the way to change her thinking in order to get some relief from her pain and anger. I will describe her actual work in a minute. Don't worry if it doesn't make complete sense the first time I say it. I'm just going to give you a peek. I'll go into much more detail throughout the rest of the book. At this point, it may make sense for you to go to my website, www.brookcastillo.com, and download the PDF that accompanies this audiobook. Bad feeling thought sample. So in this case, her circumstance was, my husband forgot my birthday. The thought she had based on that circumstance was, he doesn't really care about me. The feelings she had, thinking the thought, he doesn't really care about me, caused her to feel horrible, sad, lonely, angry. The action she took because she felt this way was to give him the cold shoulder and avoid him. The result was less time spent with her husband and less caring with her husband. Now, this is what happened when she changed the thought. The circumstance stayed the same. My husband forgot my birthday. But she changed the thought to, I know my husband wants to help me celebrate my birthday, so I will remind him. The feeling she had when she thought this thought was satisfied and love. The action she took was connecting with her husband and loving her husband unconditionally. The result was she enjoyed her birthday with her husband. Notice that all the thoughts in the first and second samples are optional. You get to decide what you think, and you have the option of thinking something that feels terrible or thinking something that feels great. Also, notice in the changed thought sample that the circumstance is exactly the same. All the power to change how you feel is in your thinking. This is great news because it's the one area of your life where you do have total control. I came up with this model as a way to manage my thoughts on a daily basis. It was heavily inspired by the work of many of my teachers, especially the work of Byron Katie. I started doing the work in my life on a regular daily basis about 3 years ago. What Katie's process did for me that was so profound was to teach me that every time I thought something, I had a feeling associated with that thought. Her most powerful sub-question, the one that I use over and over, was, how do you feel when you think that thought? This took me out of the idea that the thing happening in the world, the circumstance, was causing my feelings, and taught me that it was the thought causing my feelings. I did the work for quite a while and enjoyed the relief it gave me. As I worked with my clients and continued to work on myself, I customized the way I did the work and added the subcomponents of actions and results when I coached myself. The more I worked on this concept with myself and the more I read of Eckhart, Jill, Pema, Abraham, and Martha, the more I refined this process. The self-coaching model is based on the following truths. 1. We cannot control the world. 2. Nothing outside of us has the power to make us feel good or bad. 3. It's not the circumstances, but our thoughts about the circumstances that create our experience. 4. We attract what we think about. 5. Emotions are vibrations that lead to action. 6. We can't permanently change our results without changing our thoughts. 7. We don't have to get anything to feel better. We can feel better right now. 8. Being conscious and choosing our thoughts are the most important components to feeling better. Here are the reasons to use this model daily: to feel better, to create results, to become conscious, to think more deliberately, to create, manifest what you want in your life, to remove negative thinking and emotions, to create positive thinking and emotions. So go ahead and take a look at that PDF you've printed out. Take a look at the model in its entirety. Circumstances can trigger thoughts. Thoughts cause feelings. Feelings cause actions. Actions cause results. And notice that the results will always be evidence for the original thought. Now let's review the terms and the way I define them. Circumstances are things that happen in the world that we cannot control. Thoughts are things that happen in your mind. This is where you self-coach. Feelings are vibrations that happen in your body, caused by thoughts, not circumstances. Actions are your behavior, what we do in the world, caused by feelings and determined by thought. And results are what we see in the world, in our lives, as an effect of our actions. The result will always be evidence for the original thought. As you use this model and work on your thoughts, you will assume the position of the watcher. Doing this work is the best way to get out of your socially programmed thought patterns and identify with a deeper level of consciousness. As the watcher, you become more and more aware of who you really are, someone who's not at the mercy of unconscious thinking, realizing that every feeling, action, and result you create in your life is because of a thought is life-altering. Notice this truth and fill in the main worksheet whenever you have a negative thought, feeling, action, or result. The mere process of being aware of these components of your life is enough to change your life. Identifying with the part of you that observes your thinking is aligning with your source energy, as Abraham would call it, your compassionate witness, as Katie and Pema would say, your essential self, as Martha would say, or your watcher, or your consciousness. To further demonstrate this model, let me tell you an example. Think about this question: what is your current problem? Answer this question without thinking too hard about it. Just think about your answer or write it down. It might sound something like one of the problems I have here. I have no meaning in my life. I'm sick and tired of this. I am sad. My father is dying. I hate my job. I weigh 275 pounds. I keep yelling at my kids. I drink 5 glasses of wine a night. George Bush is president. I'm ugly. I don't have enough money. I have 20,000 to my name. I'm stressed about my job. Once you have written down the problem or thought about the problem, no matter how petty it might seem, you can categorize it into one of the 5 areas on the diagram. For example, when you say, "I am sad," this is a feeling, so you would put sad next to feeling on the diagram. So take a look at that diagram. It starts with circumstance, the next thing is thought, and then you have feeling. So next to feeling, you would write sad, because sad is a feeling. From here, you can fill out the rest of the diagram by asking the following questions. What is the thought causing me to feel sad? How do I act when I feel sad? And what is the ultimate result when I feel sad? The same applies if you use a thought. For example, I hate my job. I hate my job is a thought. So you would put it next to the thought portion of the diagram. And then you would ask the following questions. How do I feel when I think this thought? How do I act when I think this thought? And what is the result in my life when I think this thought? Now, let me give you an example that a client filled out based on starting with a circumstance in her life. Her circumstance was she did not show up on time. The thought that this client had about this circumstance was, she does not respect me. This thought caused her to feel angry, sad, and rejected. The action that she took was to act passive-aggressive and make snide comments to her friend. And the result was she got less respect from her friend. Notice that the result of less respect from her friend further proves the original thought, she does not respect me. The alternate thought concerning the same issue will cause different feelings and therefore different results. The circumstance is the same. She did not show up on time. But this time, the thought that the client chooses to think here is, she must be busy. I won't take it personally. When she thinks that thought, she feels appreciative that she made it and relaxed. The actions that she takes when she thinks the thought, she must be busy, I won't take it personally, is kindness and understanding. And the result is no effect personally, no negativity. Here again, it is the exact same circumstance, creating a different experience based on the thinking. If, when my friend shows up late, I choose to think I'm just so happy to see her, if that's believable to me, no matter that she's late, the feeling is happy and excited, and the action is to engage with my friend. The result may be that we have a wonderful and respectful lunch. You can use this model to understand almost anything that's going on with you. I will repeat this many times over the course of this book, but it is life-changing to remember. It is never the circumstance causing your feelings. It is always your thinking about the circumstance. When you become the watcher or a student of yourself, you have understood the power of self-coaching. You cannot be the watcher of your thoughts and also be your thoughts at the same time. When you shine a light on the thoughts of your mind and step out of yourself, you can see that you are not what you do, what you think, your results, or your body. The part of you that is the watcher is the part of you that is connected to all other human beings and all other energies. When you tap into the part of you that is not the part of you reacting to emotions, you have tapped into the part of you that is powerful beyond measure. Become the watcher as often as possible. See yourself from a compassionate, remote perspective. Look at everything you do in your life with fascination and curiosity. Do not judge your actions or your thoughts, but notice them. Just be in the noticing. Use the model as a way to learn about your social self, your ego, and as Eckhart would say, learn what you are not. The thoughts in your mind are not the whole of who you are. We are what is left when we can separate who we are from the thoughts, emotions, actions, and results. We are the unchangeable force behind it all. Here is the process again in its entirety using the original example at the beginning of the chapter. You start with the circumstance. Underneath the circumstance, you have a thought. Underneath the thought, you have a feeling. Underneath the feeling, you have an action. And then under the action, you have a result. To begin the process, follow these steps. Step 1, name your problem or issue. Step 2, categorize it into either a circumstance, thought, feeling, action, or result. Step 3, fill in the rest of the model. Step 4, change the thought that is not working and choose a new thought. And step 5, put the new thought in a blank model and fill in the rest with new details. In the example at the beginning of the chapter, we took a negative emotion and found the thought causing it. The original circumstance was, my husband forgot my birthday. The thought causing the pain was, he doesn't care about me. Just by filling in this one model and becoming aware of what's causing us to feel bad is enough to help us feel a bit better right now. As you do more and more of these, you will notice how much negative thinking you may be doing on a daily basis. As you move deeper into this work, you may want to delve even deeper into choosing your thoughts and deciding what you want to think. You can consciously decide to control your thoughts. If, for example, you had just completed a model and had become more aware of what you're thinking, then you could decide what you would rather be feeling. So let's say you decide you want to feel happy because it's your birthday. You would start a new model like this. The circumstance is, my husband forgot my birthday. The feeling that you want to feel is happy. So write that into your model. From here, you can ask yourself, what would I have to think and truly believe in this situation in order to feel happy? Some possible thoughts might be, my husband loves me. My husband wants to celebrate with me. My husband is so much fun and will be excited when I remind him it's my birthday. Pick one. See if it creates the feeling of happy that you are looking for. And when it does, add it to the model. For example, the circumstance is, my husband forgot my birthday. The thought you choose, my husband wants to celebrate with me. The feeling that creates for you is happy. This is not wishful thinking. This is not psychobabble. This is you choosing what to think. This is you deciding there's no upside to feeling badly about this. There is no upside in trying to make him feel bad about forgetting. Once you have the thought that you genuinely believe and it brings you a feeling of happiness, the original feeling you were seeking, you can fill in the action section by asking yourself what action might you take when you feel happy. In this case, feeling happy may cause you to connect with your husband by reminding him and celebrating with him. The final step is to ask yourself what result that action will create and fill in the final portion of the model. In this case, if you connect with your husband and remind him and celebrate with him, the result may be that you enjoy your birthday with your husband. Start with a happy feeling and you will take a happy action, which leads to a happy result. Seem too simple? Seem a bit silly? Try it out. It has completely changed my life. In the next 5 chapters, I will go into deeper explanation of each of the parts of the model with this general overview as a guide. We will explore each component and how they work in relation to each other. The power of this process is in first recognizing the thinking that you may not be aware of and understanding how you are creating your own experience with your own thinking. After identifying the thoughts that aren't working, you can then consciously decide on your own terms what you will choose to think. All those negative thoughts created by that small peanut-sized area in your brain are running around like wild animals and can be understood, acknowledged, corralled, released, and/or changed. To get started, try filling out a worksheet that you downloaded from my website. Get the general feel for the process. Identify your problem as a thought, feeling, result, or behavior, and plug it into the model. Fill in the rest of the model. Then give a try at a better feeling thought. It might feel awkward and a bit confusing in the beginning, but as we go through the book, it will get easier. Don't overthink the process. Just fill in the form with whatever comes to your mind.
Chapter 2. Model in detail, circumstances.
Janet hates her boss. He's controlling and arrogant, and he thinks he's better than her. He diminishes her accomplishments and exaggerates her mistakes. She feels trapped by him because she has to keep the job to keep food on the table. Every day she goes to work filled with dread and a secret wish to quit her job. She hired me to help her in picking a new career path. On our first call, she spent the first 30 minutes in a very convincing rant about her boss. I would title the drama she relayed as, "My boss is the devil." As she continued, I asked her, "If your boss is the devil, what does that make you?" "What do you mean?" she asked. "I'm not making this up. These aren't just thoughts I'm having. He really does act this way." "I believe you," I said. "And so what?" "Well, easy for you to say, Brooke. You don't have to go to work for him every day. This guy is really a nightmare." Working for your boss is your circumstance, Janet. Your circumstance is not causing this pain. Your thoughts about this circumstance are what throw you into suffering, I told her. "Whatever," she said with doubt and resignation. There was a brief silence on the phone, and then she continued. "Brooke, I think it's naive of you to say that my boss, who I work with every day of my life, has no control over my mood." "I hear that you don't believe me, and yet what I'm telling you is the truth. Let's explore this more deeply. Tell me something your boss said to you yesterday that you believe affected your mood." "Okay, so we went to this meeting yesterday, and he asked for an update on my progress on a project that is ongoing. When I started to speak, he rudely interrupted me and said, 'Janet, we don't need a full dissertation on what you've done. We just need an update on where you are now.' I felt totally humiliated." This is when I jumped into the model with her. I showed her that the circumstance was her boss saying, "Janet, we don't need a full dissertation on what you've done. We just need an update on where you are now." I then asked her what her thought was about what her boss had said. She said, "What do you think my thought was? It was, my boss is such a jerk and he has just made me look like a loser in front of my entire team." Janet said this to me like it was obvious. She stated this thought like it was a given and that anyone would have had the same thought. I pointed out to her that this was not the case. I showed her that this thought is the cause of her humiliation, not what her boss said. She could have just as easily have thought, "My boss is in a hurry today and needs me to be concise, and I can do that. This is not a reflection on me, but on him." This thought would have left her feeling efficient instead of humiliated. Knowing the difference between a thought and a circumstance can change how you feel in any moment, as it did for Janet. Throughout this book, I'm going to go into detail for each term on the model. The first term is circumstances. Briefly, I define this term as things that happen in the world. Circumstances are the things that we don't have direct control over from our current position. Now, the law of attraction in Abraham would say that we do have control over the circumstances we attract into our lives and that everything we experience is because of our current vibration. With this law, we would need to say that every circumstance is actually a result we have created. And there is some truth to this, as you will see later in this book. But for the sake of simplicity, we are going to keep the terms separate and call circumstances the things in the world we can't personally or directly control right now. An example of circumstances in the world might include other people's behavior, the weather, the political climate, war, death, taxes, other people's illness, the mortgage crisis, others' opinion of us, the past, and child abuse. There are, of course, many more. As Katie would say, circumstances are reality, and when you argue with reality, you lose, but only 100% of the time. What Katie means by this is that it is not the circumstance that is causing us pain, but rather our thoughts about it, our argument against it that causes us pain. No matter how horrific your past, no matter how horrible the event, the only thing that ever causes us emotional pain is our story or thoughts about it. I must note that accepting the things we cannot change is one of the most powerful things we can do. It seems almost paradoxical to think of acceptance as a powerful action. Many of my clients believe that if they accept reality, they lose all their power to ever change it. But this is simply not true. Accepting the present moment, exactly the way it is now, without completely identifying with it, is where all of our power is. Eckhart tells us over and over that the only power we have is in the moment we have right now. When we are spending our present moment in a fight we cannot win, arguing with reality, we are always losing our present moment. That being said, there is a huge difference between accepting and condoning. Accepting the way things are does not mean we agree with them or condone them. It means we are not trying to change something by pushing hard against it. We are choosing not to go to war. We are choosing not to try and force change with our own negative feelings. We can act from a place of peace and love and still move towards change. There is so much freedom when we release resistance against what the circumstances are. This does not disempower us. Just because we are not fighting or hating, which feels awful, does not mean we can't be an agent of change in the world. In fact, the opposite is true. Freedom from the fight in our mind is where we must begin if we want freedom in the world. Let me give you an example. Let's say your mother beat you physically when you were a child and you cannot accept it. You may have built up an identity around this. You may see yourself as a victim. In this present moment, some 40 years later, you are no longer being physically harmed by your mother. The only pain still associated with this event is your current thinking. If you are constantly arguing with the past by thinking thoughts like, "She should have been a better mother. She should have loved me. How could she have done that to me? I hate her. If she hadn't done that, I wouldn't be so messed up," etc., you are in a place of non-acceptance. Each one of those thoughts causes tremendous pain right now in the present. She's no longer causing you physical pain, but you continue the pain by fighting against the past and reliving the emotional pain in your mind. So, to be very clear, right now, what is painful about your past is your current thought, period. I'm sorry your mother beat you, truly, but I am sorrier that you continue to beat yourself with your current thoughts. This does not mean it's okay that your mother beat you. I would never condone physical harm as an appropriate action. But that is a circumstance we cannot change. What we can change is how you think about it. We can change every thought you have about that experience into a thought that does not cause you pain. In this way, we can literally change your feelings about the past. Accept that your mother beat you. Stop arguing with it. This does not mean that you agree with her behavior or condone her actions. It means you can accept it and let it go. In this way, you stop the beatings. The most common and arguably the most painful circumstances we cannot change are other people's behavior. We sure would like to, though. My clients and I have thick manuals of how we want our husbands, friends, and kids to behave. And they never follow them. If only they would read my manual and follow it, I would be so happy, but they never do. When we think that people should behave differently than they are, we cause ourselves so much misery. We think thoughts like, they should be kinder, they shouldn't kill, they shouldn't hit, they shouldn't be mean, they should do their homework, they should pay attention, they should be more affectionate, they should, fill in whatever blank. As Katie would say, hopeless. Trying to change that which we cannot control is painful. It also puts us into a place of complete powerlessness. Circumstances are neutral. They don't cause pain. $3 in the bank when you want $200,000 is still just $3. It doesn't cause pain. It just sits in the bank. 100 extra pounds on your body is just tissue. It just sits there. It isn't personal. It doesn't hate you. It just neutrally exists. Scales aren't evil. They are a piece of metal. People don't say mean things to you because of you. They say mean things to you because of them. When Jill went through her ordeal after her stroke, she didn't care what people thought of her. With her inability to concoct a story about other people's behavior being about her, she clearly saw it as their own. It released her from the pain of her thoughts about it. Katie walks into a room and thinks to herself, "They all love me. I just don't expect them to know it yet." Now that is a brilliantly chosen thought. It's a thought that feels good, no matter how other people behave. The other interesting thing about circumstances is that there are so many of them. You can look into your life and see so many people, places, things, neutral things, waiting for your mind to judge them. How we think about the world is what creates our experience of it. If we look at a tree and marvel at its beauty, we will feel wonderful. If we look at a tree and think about how it blocks our view, we will feel terrible. Same circumstance, different thought, and therefore a different feeling. Another example I like to use in my seminars is the winning lottery ticket. If I give you a winning lottery ticket and you believe that you have just won $10 million, how will you feel about it? Most of my clients say elated, stoked, excited, pumped. What caused those feelings? The winning lottery ticket? The money in their bank when they cash it in? No, the winning lottery ticket is neutral. It's literally a piece of paper that causes nothing. It is all the thinking that's associated with that ticket that causes the elation. Thoughts like, I'm rich, I'm so lucky, I will buy a new house, car, boat. I will never have to worry about money again. I can buy whatever I want. Those thoughts are what have the power to create so much positive emotion in the present moment. Now, what if I tell you that I was just kidding and that isn't the winning ticket after all? Does that make the emotion you just experienced less real? Does it take away the elation vibration you just experienced? Does it mean that you were never happy? No. What now changes the emotion are all your new thoughts. If you are feeling a negative emotion at this point, it may be because you were thinking thoughts like, I knew it was too good to be true. I'm so unlucky. I can't stand this stupid seminar. That was mean. Has the lottery circumstance changed? No. You still haven't won the lottery. You never had. But with your thoughts, you went from elation to depression in a matter of minutes. And even if you had won the lottery, it wouldn't be the lottery that causes your happiness. It would be your thoughts about it. Even with the money in your bank, which is a circumstance, the only joy you will ever feel because of that money is because of the thoughts you think about it. Let circumstances be. You don't have a choice anyway. People do what they do, our past is what it is, our weight is what it is right now, and our bank account is what it is. This doesn't mean it won't change, but arguing with it now has no upside. arguing with reality is just thinking negative, untrue thoughts that serve no purpose but pain. Whenever you experience your current feeling state based on something that has happened, you are missing the middleman, which is your thinking. Following are some examples of self-coaching from clients who presented with what they thought were terrible circumstances. Here are 5 different circumstances. 1. My son just got expelled from school for using drugs. 2. My sister told my husband he could do better. 3. My mother insists on coming to my house for Christmas. 4. I don't have enough money to pay my bills. And 5. My weight is 100 pounds over my natural weight right now. Here is their work. For 1, the circumstance is my son just got expelled from school for using drugs. The thought about this circumstance was, I'm a terrible mother and I didn't do a good job raising him. This caused feelings of inadequacy, sadness, and frustration. The action was crying, arguing with the principal, speaking harshly to her son. The result was everyone responded defensively and she ended up in a fight with the principal and with her son. The second circumstance was, my sister told my husband he could do better. The thought was, my sister is such a bitch. She doesn't love me. This caused feelings of angriness, sadness, embarrassment, and betrayal. The action was talking to her husband about how much she hates her sister and giving her sister the cold shoulder. And the result was, her sister felt even more convinced that her husband could do better. The third circumstance, my mother insists on coming to my house for Christmas. The thought the client had about that was, I have to let her come because she's my mother. This caused feelings of resentment. She told her mom that she could come and then acted like a complete whiny child when she was there. And the result was her mother treated her even more like a child. The fourth circumstance, I don't have enough money to pay my bills. The thought she had about that was, I'm going to have to foreclose on my home. This caused her to feel horrible, depressed, sad, and defeated. The action she took was lying on the couch most of the day and eating instead of looking for work. And the result was no second job and no more money to pay the bills. The last circumstance was, my weight is 100 pounds over my natural weight right now. The thought the client had about that was, there's something wrong with me and I have no self-control. This caused a feeling of being defeated. And the action that she took when she felt defeated was eating in order not to feel. And the result was she gained even more weight. Notice that in all the examples, the result provides additional evidence for the thought. The mind is seeking and creating evidence for its own thinking, even though it is very painful. Also, it's important to note that for the sake of this model, when you start with a painful thought or feeling, action, or result, you do not need to fill in the circumstance that triggered the thought. At that point, it's irrelevant. It is the thought about the circumstance that we're after, because we can change our thinking, and our thinking will change our feelings, actions, and results. Here's an example. If the thought is, my husband isn't attentive, that's going to cause feelings of frustration and loneliness. You possibly may act cold towards him, and the result will be less attention and less connection. In this case, the client presented with the thought, and understanding the circumstance was not important. As a coach, many of my clients really want to tell me the circumstance and give me all the details. I usually try and stop them from doing this because what they are really doing is building their evidence for the thought that's causing them so much pain. My husband isn't attentive. He came home from work. He didn't even say hello. Then I came out with a new dress on and he didn't even notice. He watches sports more than he talks to me. These are all circumstances that she ultimately cannot control. She can only control her thoughts about it. So that's where we begin. A question that I often get is, what is the difference between a circumstance and a result? The difference in relation to this model is that a circumstance is something you cannot directly control in this moment. To use the previous example, you can see that your current result may be your next circumstance. The result may be a weight gain after the action of overeating. This weight gain is now your circumstance because it's not something you can change in this moment. The only thing you can change in this moment is your thinking about your weight. So you can see how the models can stack. If your circumstance is your weight is 100 pounds over your natural weight, your thought is there's something wrong with me and I have no self-control, this creates a feeling of being defeated, and you eat in order not to feel, the result is you gain more weight. This weight gain is now your new circumstance. Your new circumstance is my weight is 102 pounds over my natural weight right now. Your results can create new circumstances in your life, but they are not circumstances in and of themselves. Circumstances may be the current effect of a result, or they may have absolutely nothing to do with you at all. Remember that circumstances are things you cannot control or change in this moment. When I was first creating this model, one of my best challenges on it came from one of my clients. She said, "So what about my messy house? Is this a circumstance or a result? I do have control over it, and I can change it." I replied, "First, your statement that your house is messy is really a thought about the state of your house. But I see where you're going with your question. So let's just restate it for clarity. You can say, 'My house is not as clean as it usually is.' This is more factual versus judgmental because the word messy is relative. So you have a house that's not as clean as usual, and you wonder if it's a circumstance because you feel you do have the ability to control it by, say, cleaning it. Here is where that in this moment piece becomes important. You do not have direct control in this moment to completely change the circumstance of the unclean house. And yes, the unclean house may have been a result of another thought you had earlier in the week, but it is still your current circumstance in this moment. Here's the model. Circumstance, an unclean house. Thought, I have to get a grip. I can't even keep my own house in order. Feeling, frustrated, angry, embarrassed. Action, clean the house while I beat myself up. Result, a clean house and a defeated sense of self. Here's an alternative. Same circumstance, an unclean house. New thought, I have time to clean my house now and I'm good at it. Feeling, energized and confident. Action, clean the house and listen to great music. The result is a clean house and an appreciation of my work. Remember, this model is used when you are suffering. It is a tool that works when we are suffering because of our thinking. We do not use this model when we are dealing with thoughts and circumstances that do not cause prolonged suffering because it would not be useful. Here is an example of a circumstance where the model would not be useful, and there are many more like it. The circumstance. There's a bug in my eye. Thought, I'm going to take the bug out of my eye. Feeling, confident in my abilities. Action, I take the bug out of my eye. The result, no bug in my eye. As you can see, this work was completely unnecessary. Even though the circumstance was not ideal, the thought never went to negativity, so the relief happened quickly. There are many examples like this where doing the model would be redundant and unnecessary. Use this model when the circumstance thinking pattern is causing you to suffer and you cannot access immediate relief. We do not need to use the model when we are feeling good about something. Feelings in this model are not feelings of physical or involuntary pain, but rather are emotional feelings caused by our thoughts. You notice that I do not include the physical discomfort caused by the bug because it does not fall under the definition of feeling in this model. I think I covered all the bases on circumstances, and I don't want to make this more complicated than it has to be. It really is simple if you don't overthink it and you go with the general definition of circumstances being things you cannot control now. You'll know you need to use the model when you are suffering and you believe it's because of an external circumstance. The most important thing to know is that it is your thinking, not your circumstance.
Chapter 3, Model in Detail, Thoughts.
Without her left hemisphere thinking judgmental thoughts, Jill was happy. She didn't care that she was drooling, that she didn't know what a number was, or that she was a Harvard-trained PhD. She was a former brain scientist who couldn't do a child's puzzle, and yet she was peaceful and joyous. Her chatterbox peanut was choking on the blood from a stroke and didn't have a chance to tell her that this was terrible. So she smiled and drooled on the couch in a state of perfect peace. She was at one with the universe, and she couldn't make her own breakfast. This is not to say that she didn't want to ever think again. She saw the value of her left hemisphere's language center and consciously made the effort to regain the part of her thinking mind that was useful to her. She also chose not to re-engage the part of her peanut that was harshly judgmental, worried incessantly, or was verbally abusive to others. She realized, by the temporary absence of those thoughts, how good she felt not having them. So she chose not to think those thoughts anymore. She chose not to reintroduce the neurological circuitry that ran the loops of worry, judgment, and pain. If we don't play our circuitry of doom, we don't feel the negative emotion it causes. If we manage what we think about and question our thoughts, we rewire our habits of thought. We literally change the pathways inside our brain. But just like any habit, if your brain is running on automatic pilot and you haven't had a stroke, you're going to have to become aware and disciplined in witnessing your thoughts instead of just letting your mind run the show. Instead of letting peanut determine what you will manifest and feel, take back that power and start consciously and deliberately deciding what to think. How do you know if you should question or change a thought? If you don't like the way it makes you feel. There's no need to question thoughts that feel good. Good feelings lead to good actions, which lead to good results. Question any thought that doesn't give you a feeling, action, or result you want. Remember that most thoughts that cause pain are not true. Just because a thought you are thinking feels true doesn't mean it is true. Your feelings are the effect of your thinking, not evidence that your thinking's true. Also, keep in mind the last chapter, which discussed the difference between a circumstance and a thought, as we do this work on thoughts. A circumstance is something you do not have any direct control over in this moment, but your thoughts are completely within your control. For example, your mother dying is a circumstance, but thinking that she's dying too early is a thought. Circumstances do not cause feelings. Only our thoughts cause feelings. There are many ways to change a thought, but I'm going to teach you the easiest and quickest way I know. If you want to become a master at changing your thinking, please go to www.thework.com. Byron Katie is by far the best teacher for changing your thinking on the planet. But here is my shortened, quick start version of thought changing. Write down the painful thought. Write down the feeling the thought causes you to feel. Write down a slightly better feeling thought that you know is true. Write down the feeling the new thought causes you to feel. And repeat as needed. Here's an example. The original thought is, I am fat and ugly. The feeling that causes is ashamed. Here are some replacement thoughts. I have nice lips. That makes me feel happy. I have pretty hair. That makes me feel proud. I am kind. That makes me feel content. I am not as fat as I used to be. That makes me feel glad. Byron Katie will take you on a full turnaround after asking you four other questions, and this can be incredibly powerful. My quick start process has you inch up the chain by finding better feeling thoughts that you can already believe in completely. This combines the work of Esther Hicks, Byron Katie, and Pema Chodron. I have found this process to be incredibly helpful in dealing with any negative emotion. After you change the thought, plug it into the model and fully integrate what it would mean for you to focus on it. When you are picking a new thought, make sure it's a thought you genuinely believe and that it will lead to a good feeling. You might want to ask yourself how you want to feel, and then you can ask what thought would create that feeling. Thought appears, as Katie and Pema would say. There's not a darn thing we can do about that. The brain runs and does its job and creates mind noise. The question is, are we paying attention? Are we conscious of what we're thinking? Or are we just la la la, acting out our thoughts with complete lack of knowing or awareness? Are we attaching to negative loops of circuitry and believing lies? Are we unconsciously letting peanut take us on the train of suffering and pretending we don't have a choice? Want to know what your brain circuitry loops look like? What they're saying? Take a look at your life. Those results you have in your life are because of the thoughts you have in your head. No money? You have no abundant money thought circuitry. Overweight? Overweight thought circuitry. Bored? Bored thought circuitry. Great. Some of you are looking at your life right now and creating even deeper, stronger ruts of circuitry that say, I'm not good enough. Pay attention to this. Just by noticing these thoughts from a watcher perspective, you are changing the pattern. You are creating what Jill might call a right brain perspective. Eckhart would be so pleased that you're becoming more awakened in this present moment. You have transcended thought just by becoming conscious of it. Transcendence! You cannot be your thought and be conscious of your thought at the same time. Consciousness of the ego dissolves the ego. Enlightenment is not knowing about you, it's being you. When you are watching your mind, you are being in the place of the watcher, the knowing, the awareness, and that is enlightenment. So first, before you get all action stepped on me and ask how the heck to continue to change your thoughts, stay with this truth for a minute. Just by being aware of your thoughts, you have changed so much. just by identifying with the right brain, the consciousness, the hemisphere where Peanut is not allowed in the house, you have become enlightened, according to Eckhart. You have arrived in the present moment by not attaching to thought, according to Pema. You have become aware of what you have been asking for, according to Abraham. You have become the stargazer, according to Martha. And you have entered the only dimension where you have some control, according to Katie. Tony would remind you that you have just witnessed the best money-making tool in the universe, your thoughts. Becoming conscious of your thoughts is step one, and even though there are 5 more steps, if you get through step one, you are more than halfway there. Become aware of what you're thinking. Take full responsibility for what thoughts you attach to. Remember that a belief is just a thought you keep on thinking, or a thought that has tremendous amount of emotion associated with it. Remember that your entire identity and how you see yourself is all from your mind's eye, or more accurately, your mind's thoughts. Looking at your mind instead of being in your mind is key. Take a moment right now and go to the watcher. Pay attention to the first 10 thoughts you think and write them down. By doing this exercise, you are more enlightened just by being aware of your thoughts. I'm also going to assume that much of what you wrote is not to your liking. Most likely, you're having many thoughts that cause you to feel, well, crappy. So here's where I think Eckhart leaves us hanging a bit. He tells us to be in the present moment and watch our thoughts, which I think is easy to say because he doesn't really have any negative thoughts since waking up to Nirvana that one beautiful day in July. The rest of us become conscious of our thoughts and see that there's a really freaking good reason that we've stayed unconscious all these years. It's a war zone in there. Not many pretty things to see. Here is a sampling from my mind and the minds of some of my clients. I am not good enough. I am ugly. Look at those wrinkles. Does Botox really work? Do you think she would ever sleep with me? I must do something for approval. My boss hates me. He makes more money than me. I'm not enough. Seriously, do you think she would sleep with me if I wasn't married? No one loves me enough. His parents were rich, that's why he got that job. I need more money. I think my wife is heavier than her. I'm a victim. My father will never be proud of me. My mother never shuts up. My hair is stringy. Fat is hanging over my pants. I wonder if I got her drunk. That might work. How did I end up with this life that sucks so badly? I don't have enough time. There's never going to be enough. I haven't saved for my kid's college fund. How the hell can he afford that car? Do I have enough time to get her drunk and sleep with her? I need lipo. So we witness our thoughts and see something like this, and we're supposed to think we're awakened? I wonder what Eckhart would think of this present moment awareness. The truth is, he would nod quietly, love unconditionally, and note that the ego is a busy little peanut. Then he would remind us to breathe. Are you like me? Do you want to skip that take a breath part? I just want to get to the not feeling pain part. I want to get on to the thinking thoughts that make me skinny and rich part. The breathing part seems to delay the result part. Why, Pema? Why, Eckhart? Why breathe again? Talk me into it. Breathing brings us into the present moment. But what if I don't want this present moment? What if I want a future moment where I'm skinny and rich? Eckhart would tell me that the only way to get there is from here. Pema would tell me to release my attachment to the idea that skinny and rich is where peace resides. Katie would ask me to question that thought. Tony would ask me why the heck I wasn't rich already, and he would have a point. And the answer to his question would be that I have a belief in this moment that I can't have it and that there will never be enough. And as long as I believe that in this moment, I can't move towards having it in a future moment. Abraham would say it's law. You can't attract something you are not aligned with, and as long as I'm thinking I can't be rich or skinny or whatever, I won't ever be. Breathing in the present moment makes all this clear. Breathing in the present moment with consciousness is where any painful thought is dissolved. At this point, you can use Katie's inquiry to turn the thought around, or Abraham's suggestion to find a better feeling thought, or Tony's process of programming the mind to associate massive pain with the thought so you won't think it again. Pema would remind us not to attach to or fight the thought, but to just be at peace with it and have a look. I personally do Katie's work on the really painful thoughts. I've never found anything more effective for feeling a tremendous wave of relief than taking a painful thought, asking her for questions, and doing a turnaround. For the smaller thoughts, I use the process I described earlier in this chapter of finding a better feeling thought and focusing my mind on what I want in my life. Most often, just by becoming aware of the thought and by giving it the light of awareness, it disappears. I'm not sure if it's because of practice or because my brain has rewired, but I do know that the more I practice this, the more it works. A thought is a thing, a statement, a collection of words. It is the cause of your feelings. It is the cause of what you manifest. It is the basis for belief systems, and it is what determines your attraction. It is run by a little group of cells the size of a peanut. It is our job to use the rest of our brain to manage that little peanut, because although it's a very important piece of our life, it is not management material. The little mind, the ego, the cause of what Jill calls internal self-abuse, is the cause of more misery on the planet than everything else combined. Peanut chatter starts wars and justifies abuse. It needs supervision, and that supervisor is you. Start now by filling out the worksheets on one negative thought, then do it again on any remaining negative thoughts. Don't stop until you feel good.
Chapter 4, Model in Detail, Feelings.
It is all about feelings, really. That's the whole reason we do anything. We feel good and we associate good feelings with it, and so we want more of it. How we feel determines what we do and what we don't do. So what really are these things we call feelings that we spend so much time avoiding and seeking? The definition on the web of a feeling is, feelings are the emotional state of mind which cannot be explained but only experienced. I like this definition. I like that it shows that feelings are an effect of the mind, experienced in our body. It is very important to note that when I'm talking about feelings here, I'm only referring to feelings that are the effect of the mind and not physical sensations that are caused by the body or external environment directly. I am not including illness, physical conditions like being cold or hot, hunger, physical pain, the startle reflex, fight or flight, freeze, or any other involuntary physical response. I want to be very careful to distinguish between physical sensations and emotional feelings so you don't get confused. Physical sensations that are not an effect of thought are involuntary responses. These responses are typically caused by our primitive brain and evolved initially to keep us alive and safe from predator attacks, starvation, and extinction. Our fight or flight response may be initiated in our body before any cognition has a chance to occur. For example, when a snake strikes out at you from behind a pane of glass at the zoo, your body may have a flight reaction that precedes thought. The reaction is an involuntary, primitive response patterned in the brain. When physical responses are involuntary, we do not note them in the feeling line of the model. In fact, they are circumstances due to the fact that we do not have direct control over them. Hunger, illness, physical pain, and a flight response are all circumstances that may trigger thoughts. We can decide what to think and how to interpret these circumstances just like any other external circumstance. In the example of the snake striking out, the thought may be, "Don't worry, the snake's behind glass. You are safe." With this thought, there is the immediate dissipation of the flight response. Every thought causes a feeling. The feeling is the effect of thought. I must say this 1,000 times a week. A client will tell me that they believe something, and I will ask them if the thought is valid. Many times they will say, "It feels valid." That is, of course, how it feels, because you're thinking it. An emotion is a vibration in your body. I like to think of the image of being injected with a pure feeling so we could just sit and watch ourselves experience it in our bodies without the thought causing it. I think this would make it easier to truly describe the feeling without the brain chatter in the way. I like to use words like tight, fast, shallow, or hot to describe anxious feelings, because that is how they generally feel in my body. I like to use words like slow, open, deep, or expanding to describe peaceful feelings, because that's how they feel to me. Many times my clients will describe the feeling with another thought. I will say, "So how does that feel?" And they will say, "It feels like she shouldn't do that to me." Note that this is not a feeling, but the thought causing the feeling. A feeling is a vibration in the body, not a sentence in the mind. Following is a long list of feelings that might help you when you are trying to identify what is going on when you connect to the vibration in your body. Try to think of feelings as single words and not as sentences. which are usually thoughts. When you look at a feeling on the list that you've downloaded from my site, try to imagine and describe what that feeling feels like. Are there many of these feelings that you have on a regular basis? Being present with your feelings is like opening a conscious doorway to your thoughts. Our feelings are caused by our thoughts. Some are caused by patterns of thoughts or beliefs. A belief is a thought you keep on thinking or have been thinking for many years that causes you to feel the same feeling over and over. The best way to understand yourself intimately is to feel your feelings from a place of consciousness. When you go through your day, ask yourself what you are feeling. Name the feeling and think about what it feels like in your body. For example, fear. It is a fast vibration in my body. It vibrates very fast in my heart and chest. I notice my breath becoming shallow. I notice my eyes open wider. I notice the desire to move and take action. I hear a slight buzz in my ears. This is fear. I am in fear. I am doing fear. This is what fear feels like. The more specific you can be in describing your emotions, the better. Try to see yourself from a different perspective while you're in the emotion. Notice if you try to escape the emotion. Notice if you try to avoid it or detach from it. Notice how long the feeling lasts if you stay with it. Notice any resistance to it. One of the most common feelings my clients say they are feeling is stress and/or anxiety. I call these cover emotions or feelings. Notice I actually use the word emotions and feelings interchangeably in this book. Anxiety is usually the fight against a feeling. So for example, maybe you were thinking a thought that your boss should have given you a raise when he didn't. This may cause a feeling of disappointment or anger. But because you don't want to feel this negative emotion or explore what's going on for you, you simply fight feeling it. You push it away and ignore it. As it comes back, you fight harder to keep it down. And that fight feels like anxiety. I think many forms of depression are actually the exhaustion that follows this unwinnable fight. One of the things I sometimes suggest to my clients is that they intentionally intensify the feeling. This is one way to break the pattern of action. So if you feel yourself getting anxious, you can try to intensify the anxiety. Increase that vibration. Really, over-exaggerate the feeling. For clients who have been conditioned to fight emotion, this can be a huge step in getting more in touch with their bodies and more access to their thinking. By increasing the feeling, they are actually taking control of it and seeing that it's not something happening to them, but something they can increase and therefore decrease. In my last book, I also had a chapter on feelings, and one of my suggestions was to use the metaphor of a room for each feeling. Instead of pushing your back against the door of the room and trying to hold it closed and keep the feeling away, open the door. Walk in and look around the room. Notice everything about what is going on in your body when you are in this room of your emotion. This is a very different experience than trying to hold the bursting door closed and locking the emotion away in a dark, festering room of feelings. We aren't sure exactly what's in the room sometimes, and yet we are so busy fighting against it that we can't describe the feeling, let alone the thought causing it. Can you see how this constant fighting and ignoring the genuine feeling can be a vicious cycle? It spins us away from getting access. If you are conscious enough to feel the emotion of disappointment all the way through, you can ask, "What is causing this feeling?" and find the thought. From here, you have the choice and power to change your thinking and relieve the feeling. You can end the ongoing battle not to feel. As my clients begin this process, they often come back to me and say that they feel worse than before they started with me. I remind them that they don't feel worse, they're just more aware now. They have just become more conscious of how bad they really feel. This is a good thing. From this new consciousness, they can decide to change and not be at the mercy of unconscious thought and feeling. Your feelings will always tell you clearly the nature of your thoughts. If you feel crappy all the time, it means you have crappy thoughts. If you feel happy all the time, you have happy thoughts. This is how it works. Knowing and remembering this truth will help you not to overlook many thoughts that may go unnoticed as being negative. Even when a thought appears to be positive, you must check it by asking yourself how the thought feels. For example, about a year ago, I had been working with a client for 4 months and felt like our coaching was completed. This client insisted I keep working with him, even though I state very clearly at the beginning of any coaching relationship that I do intense short-term coaching. I struggled for hours with my own coach on how to speak my truth and let this client know I would not be keeping him on as a regular client. I wanted to let him know that he was ready to apply the work on his own, and his dependence on me was unhelpful and possibly holding him back. I first tried practicing the thought, "I'm done coaching him." Although true, this thought brought up a feeling of guilt within my body. When I changed the thought to, "Our time together is complete for now," I felt peaceful and relaxed. They are similar sounding thoughts, but they caused me completely different feelings and would have created very different results. I have found it nearly impossible to have a bad feeling thought lead to a permanent good result, so I always check my thoughts before I take action. Yeah, but what about the starving children in Africa? What about the abused children in America? What about the woman who has three mouths to feed and has no money? First, let me just say that I find it fascinating that many times when I propose that improving your life is as simple as changing your thinking, my clients seem to come up with some evidence that they are sure will shoot a hole in my theory. And usually, the example is some outlandish circumstance that is in no way related to their life or reality. So before you let your left brain feed the belief, "It can't be this easy," I want you to sit with it for a minute and allow yourself to notice the truth in it. You are not starving in Africa. You are not currently being beat over the head while reading. You are here reading this book. Does this truth apply to you? And if you think it doesn't, ask yourself why. Is that really a valid reason? My guess is not. I haven't had a client yet who has not seen the power of this work. So as far as the people who have dire circumstances, the only thing of value I can say is that changing your thinking may not completely or immediately remove the physical pain or hunger or abuse or neglect, but it can make it better or worse. You can be a mom with no money or a starving child, and your thoughts about your circumstance will increase your suffering or decrease it. There is no doubt of that. If you are starving and you think thoughts of pain, your pain will be increased. If you are starving and you think thoughts of love, your feeling of love will be increased. This does not take away from the severity of physical pain and suffering. But the truth is, the way you think about it does either add or decrease your suffering. Even with ample justification for thinking negative thoughts, you're still just thinking negatively and creating more negative feelings. My brother and I grew up in the same household. We had the same depressed mom and the same philandering, unavailable father. We shared many of the same circumstances, and yet his thoughts led him to unbearable feelings of pain that led him to the action of becoming addicted to drugs. He died of a cocaine overdose at the age of 30. My thoughts led me to a life filled with self-love, an amazing husband, and two beautiful children. I have a life filled with joy and love and happiness. No doubt because I had the ability and desire to take control of my own thinking. Same circumstances, different thoughts. Stop and take a deep breath. How are you feeling right now? That is also how you're thinking right now. Look at the list of feelings again. Which of these feelings do you most want to have in this moment? What is the feeling you are seeking? You may think you are seeking money or a lover or a new apartment. But what you are really always seeking is a feeling that you believe that item or circumstance will create for you. Knowing now that your thoughts create your feelings, you may realize that you don't need to achieve these goals or have these things to feel good. You can change your thoughts and feel good now. This is the trick with the law of attraction. Feel the feeling and experience the vibration now to attract the thing you want. You will then realize the thing you want will just be the cherry on top of the emotion you have been experiencing while you wait. If you want the feeling of elation, all you need to do is find the thought that would cause that feeling and think it. I swear, it really is that simple. Oh, I almost forgot. In order to get the feeling of the thought you are thinking, you have to believe the thought you are thinking. Minor point, but the good news is that just like you can decide what to think and therefore feel, you can also decide what to believe. This is where the Byron Katie work is so awesome. Any thought you believe that causes you pain, you can stop believing. The theory is simple according to Katie.
Any thought that causes you pain is simply not true. Abraham would back her up on this. They would say any thought that causes you pain is a thought that is not aligned with your true self. Remember, we are not arguing about circumstances being true here, just our thoughts about circumstances. So you can tell a thought needs to be questioned if it causes you pain. If you want to feel passion, think a passionate thought. And how do you believe a passionate thought? You change the thought until you believe it and feel passion. For example, I can think the thought, this self-coaching 101 model will reduce the suffering of the world. Okay, I don't feel any passion. I don't believe that my little book will end world suffering. But I do believe using this model could end some of the needless suffering in the world. I believe this. I truly do. And when I think this thought, I get so excited and passionate about writing, I take action and I actually write. Seriously, did it today. Thought that thought, felt the passion it caused, and that's why I'm reading these words to you today. This is the main difference between saying an affirmation and believing the affirmation. You can say the affirmation in hopes that someday you will believe it and feel good, or you can say an affirmation that you believe now and you will feel good now. Feeling good is contagious and will attract more feeling good thoughts, and that will lead to feeling good actions, which lead to good results. Here are some examples of thoughts my clients created that they can believe to feel good. I can do me better than anyone in the world. I am here for a very important and exciting reason. I have unlimited love to give. It's cool being smart and good at math. My body is healthy and vibrant. I am able to thrive in this environment. Every drug we take for non-health reasons, every food we overeat, every cigarette we smoke, or every porn flick we watch is to change how we feel. We try to treat the symptom. We try to change the feeling without locating its cause. We dull our emotional pain by covering it up. We put drugs and food and sex and overworking on top of our pain in hopes that we won't notice. But we do notice. The pain is there, and when it goes unchecked, it gets bigger and shows up in our lives and in our bodies. We cover it up, we fight it, we run from it, and we project it onto others. Anything but feel it. Why the heck is that? Why don't we just buzz with the vibration of feeling? Seriously, think about how much war would be prevented if we would just feel our feelings instead of reacting to them. Finding the cause and changing the cause of our feelings, our thoughts, not the terrorist thoughts, by the way, so we feel better. Imagine that for a sec. Feels good, right? That's because you're imagining a world based on conscious, thoughtful thought and not on impulsive reactivity. It's possible. It begins by being aware of what you're feeling. Self-awareness and emotional intelligence begin with you. And they can literally change your experience of the world. Think about this right now. What are your top three desired feelings? Write them down. Mine are peace, love, and excitement. What are the thoughts that you have to believe to be true to create these feelings in your body? My thought for peace is, everything happens exactly the way it's supposed to, perfectly. I do believe this, so when I think it, I feel peaceful. I remind myself to think and feel peace often, especially when the circumstances seem to trigger alternate thoughts. My feeling of love is caused by my thought, everyone in my life is unbelievably amazing. My thought for excited is, there's nothing I genuinely want that I can't have if I stay aligned. Now it's your turn. Being aware of your negative thoughts and feelings is just the first step. Now decide how you want to feel instead. What are the top three feelings you want to feel? What are the respective thoughts you can think to feel these feelings? I will finish up this chapter by giving you a very powerful example of this based on a client's experience. Elizabeth was attending my retreat in Lake Tahoe, which includes a rope course. She was on the ladder made of rope that extended many feet into the sky. Her primitive brain was in flight mode, causing her body to vibrate at a very high rate involuntarily. The brain was perceiving that she was in danger, and it triggered thoughts like, "Run! Get down! Stop climbing! You're in danger!" It was at this point that her involuntary reaction, the circumstance, triggered the thoughts that she could choose to manage. As I coached her, she began to allow herself to feel the feelings of fear with awareness and access the thoughts her involuntary response had triggered. I had her say them out loud to me. I'm scared of falling. I'm going to get hurt. I can't do this. I'm afraid of heights. I also had her consciously increase the feeling of fear in her body, so the vibration felt less involuntary and more within her control. As the ladder shook due to the wind and her body movement, I had her move it more and shake it so she felt in control of the movement. Then, as she stayed focused on the watcher, able to observe herself and describe the experience to me, she decided what she wanted to feel, calm and strong. I asked her what she would have to think in order to feel calm. She said, "I am safe. I am strong. I believe in myself. I can do this." She repeated the new thoughts out loud over and over as she climbed that ladder. This caused her to feel calm and confident, which led to the ultimate action of not only climbing the ladder, but letting go and belaying down, which had been unthinkable just minutes before. She changed her thoughts and therefore her results. Ultimately, this is how we change our lives.
Chapter 5, Model in Detail, Actions.
Finally, the doing. What can we do about it? Take action. Get moving. Just do it. Get to work already. All this thinking and feeling and musing. When are we going to get to the work and change the world? Or maybe that's not you at all. Maybe you have your vision board and have been saying affirmations and wondering where your money and success are. Either way, action may not be what you think it is. It's not just doing and doing and doing the same thing and wondering what the heck is wrong. And it's not doing nothing and waiting for your ship to come in, or for your knight in shining armor, or for your winning lottery ticket. Most coaching programs I've seen are all about the taking action piece and the getting the result piece, without consideration of the thought being the cause of action. This type of work leads to a constant struggle of action against the unchanged thought. As shown in my attempt to change spin cycle diagram that you downloaded from the site, eventually something has to give. It's either the original thought that changes or the action stops, and therefore the result changes. There is no amount of action that can make up for negative thinking. The result either proves the original thought or struggle occurs. In most cases, the thought never changes and the result goes back to proving the original thought. I cannot repeat this enough. If you want to change your behavior, you must change the thought first in order for the change to be permanent. Many of the changes we make in our lives naturally allow for this to happen without us noticing. When we decide we want to lose weight, we may change our thinking to, "I can no longer live this way. I deserve better." Without even realizing it, the new thought has started a new thought, feeling, action, result cycle that motivates us to go to the gym and eat healthier food. Ultimately, we lose weight as a result. Other times, we may have attempted to go to the gym and eat healthy, but we kept thinking the old thought, "I don't deserve a thinner body. I'm lazy. This is what I was dealt." In this case, our effort, action, will ultimately change back to support the thought we are thinking. Common actions people want to change are eating, spending, drinking, working, worrying, gossiping, and procrastinating, just to name a few. When we notice these behaviors and their results in our lives, we commonly fall into the trap of self-sabotage by thinking even more negative thoughts. If we are yelling at our kids because we feel worry from the thought, "My kids don't behave," we sometimes end up worrying about the yelling, and the effect of the yelling creates new thoughts. "I'm a terrible mother," for example. That leads to even more worry, stress, and yelling. The first step is in asking, "Why do you do what you do? What are the thoughts and feelings that drive your behavior?" You can then ask what it is you want to do. When you know the behavior you are seeking to practice, you can ask, "What thought do I need to think in order to lead to that behavior?" By thinking the new thought and believing it, you drive new action, which leads to new results, which provide evidence for the new thought. Taking aligned and thoughtful action based on newly created thoughts helps us transcend our circumstances even when they're not ideal. Tony likes to call it massive action. Eckhart calls it awakened doing. Whatever you want to call it, it's fine with me. After you change your thinking, you make the change permanent with supporting action. Action can provide evidence for our new thoughts. When we take action, we are either proving or disproving our thoughts by the results we are creating. As we take action, we are chipping away at old thoughts and breaking up long-established patterns of action. For example, if you are an overspending kind of thinker and you think thoughts like, buying stuff feels good, you're going to feel compulsive and anxious until you take action and buy the shoes on sale at Nordstrom. The result will be that credit card bill that you are afraid to open, let alone pay. The result will prove that you need to do things to make yourself feel better. Hey, what about shopping? When you change your thought to, I don't need to shop to feel good, in the beginning, you're going to need to take some action to prove this true. You do this by not shopping and thinking thoughts that feel good. At first, this may seem difficult, and here's why. You have established a very familiar pattern of action caused by a very familiar pattern of thought and feeling. As you start to take action that deviates from this pattern, you may feel a bit out of place or off. Plan on it. Your brain has just been flipped out of autopilot, and it can be very discombobulating. Also, that belief that you have held so close and dear, remember the one where shopping is the ultimate high? Well, let's just say it's going to be upset when you stop giving it evidence to stand on. It's like a hungry, chubby sentence that wants to be fed lots of proof. When you start disproving it, you now have a conflict with a deeply seated thought that is stored in your brain, with lots of emotion and evidence waiting to be activated by the next store. When you do the opposite and interrupt the pattern, the neurons supporting the belief literally weaken and stop firing. This is not good news for the little impulse that's been having quite a party in that small peanut-sized space in your brain. Treat it like a small child having a tantrum. It's noisy. It may cause a fuss and some added vibration as it pulls out all its supporting thoughts and tries to make you believe them. Don't take the bait. Just notice. Don't buy. Forge a new pattern. Before you know it, you won't be able to remember why you ever thought buying a pair of shoes now was worth feeling awful later. Action that disproves a thought is how you manage peanut and change your thinking forever. Another thing to consider when looking at your life and the actions you want to take to get the results you want is how just one little step out of the old pattern changes everything. If you really wish you would exercise each morning, you must focus on the very first step that will change the pattern. It's not lifting the first weight at the gym that breaks this pattern. It's the moment you wake up earlier than normal, put on your gym clothes, and grab the bottle of water. If you do only this, you've changed your pattern of action. With my weight loss clients, I have them exercise for 5 minutes 3 times a week if they've been sedentary for many months. This 5 minutes won't change their calorie burn much, but it will change the pattern of thought, feeling, action. It will slowly chip away at the thought that says, I don't work out, or I'm lazy. This small action is what can eventually change an entire identity. Martha talks about doing turtle steps by taking one small action at a time. With me, for example, I kept thinking the thought, I will never write another book because I hate writing. This thought led to a feeling of resistance. The action was inaction, or not writing. The result was no book. When I decided to change the thought to, I'm going to write a book titled Self-Coaching 101, and it's going to help as many people as my first book, I felt excited. From this place of excitement, I did not write. I was nowhere near ready to write. I was in between thoughts at this point, needing to break my old, I will never write again, pattern. So I emailed my book designer and had her design the cover. This was a very tiny action for me, literally just one email. But as soon as I saw that cover with my name on it, I knew that someday it would be a book. It was great evidence against my old thought and for my new one. What action do you need to take to disprove your old painful thought just a little? Think about this right now. What is the new thought? What feeling does it cause? What action can you take to build evidence for it now? Following are some real client examples of the model at work. The first models I'll describe show undesired action put through the model, and the rest show the samples of how to use the model to add desired action to our behavior. Undesired actions. The undesired action in the first example is overeating. It is caused by the thought, I'm too fat. The thought, I'm too fat, causes a feeling of anxiousness, which leads to overeating, and overeating leads to gaining weight. The second example of undesired action is not writing my book. The thought that causes it is, I have nothing to say, which makes me feel uninspired, which leads me to not writing the book, which leads to the result of empty pages. The third example of undesired action is yelling at my spouse. Yelling at my spouse is caused by the thought, he is shut down and not connecting. The feeling that creates in me is frustration, and that causes me to yell at my spouse. And the result of that is him shutting down. The last example is not marketing my business as an action. The thought that causes it is I'm not a good consultant, which causes feelings of being apathetic, which leads me not to market my business, and the result is no one hires me. Now let's look at it from a different perspective. Now let's look at it from desired actions. If your desired action is, I want to eat healthy, a thought that may cause that would be, I love and am in control of my body. This will cause feelings of calm, peacefulness, and connectedness. The ultimate result will be energized and at your natural weight. Another desired action may be paying off your mortgage. A thought that could lead to that action would be, my thoughts determine my inflow of money, not my action. The feeling that would create would be confidence and abundance. And the result would be, possibly, eventually, paying off your mortgage. A last example of a desired action may be running in the morning with my son. A thought that could drive that action would be, if I run with my son every day, I can teach him the mental discipline to compete. This gets me feeling excited, motivated, and competitive. And the result may be time with my son, teaching him, and doing my best to help him. An important heads up needs to go out to you as you begin to get inspired to take more action. As your thoughts change from negative to positive, you will notice an increase in your mental energy. The juicier and more exciting your thoughts, the more driven and energetic your action will be. But as you change these thoughts and feelings, you will literally be changing your self-concept and your identity in many ways. The new thoughts you think may be thoughts you've never thought before, which will lead to actions you've never taken or sustained before. As with anything new, you may feel worse before you feel better. You need to allow this and allow yourself to suck at it for a while. Never use action inspired by a new thought as a reason to think new negative thoughts or to beat yourself up. With enough practice, the new action will cement your belief in the thought. It really is true when they say, stay with the new thought long enough to practice and cement the new inspired action. Finally, in closing out the chapter, I want to emphasize that the main point of this book is that we must change our thoughts to change our lives. This is the same message you read about in The Secret or any of the Law of Attraction materials. Thoughts are things and we create what we think about. But there is one big but that was underemphasized in The Secret, and that is action is still required. You cannot sit in your room staring at the wall and attract a toned body. You must change your thoughts first, and then you take the newly inspired action and keep thinking the new thought over and over until the pattern is changed permanently and becomes more effortless. Sorry, The Secret isn't a magic pill. It requires you to change your thought first and then take the action that the new thought inspires.
Chapter 6, Model in Detail, Results.
Do you know what you want? Really? What? How specific are you? Do you have a vision board covered with the results you want? Your results? The ones you're going to create with your thoughts, feelings, and actions? I'm always so surprised when I ask people what they want and they say, I don't know. They say they will just see what happens and take what comes.
As if they aren't the ones who create it with their unconscious thinking. A life of reaction is more the norm than the exception. So take a few minutes right now and think about what you want. Think about the results you want in the following areas. Family relationships, friendships, work, family life, home life, money, spirituality, 10 years from now, 50 years from now. How do your current results match up? Can you identify why you have or don't have the results you want? Can you pinpoint the exact thought? Can you distinguish the difference between your circumstances and your results? In order to get what you want, you must think thoughts and believe thoughts that lead to the result. Negative thoughts do not lead to positive long-term results. They may give you temporary quick fixes, but they won't lead to long-term satisfaction or to freedom from the struggle against negativity. Pick one of the items from the list of things you want and fill out the Law of Attraction worksheet that you downloaded from my site. Once you have completed the worksheet, plug your new thought into the model. After you have the new thought, you will want to study the model with this new thought often. Feel the feeling of the thought, take the action of the feeling, and visualize the result as often as possible. The more the better. If anti-thoughts come up that try to counter your thought, plug them into another model and change them as many times as needed to create a new, better-feeling thought result pattern. Now that you've used the model to attract what you want, what can you do if you're getting a result you don't want? By now you know the drill, but I will repeat it anyway. Tony always says that repetition is the mother of skill. The goal is to find the thought causing the unwanted result. You just need to get a hold of one of these thoughts to break the pattern. You can get access to the thought by acknowledging the action leading to the result. Make sure you find your action, not the action of others. Others' actions are always circumstances. Then see if you can locate the feeling and thoughts that led to the action. Then fill in the worksheet. Now, to break this pattern, you'll need to change the thought. Find a better feeling thought that you believe. This can be challenging when the thought at first glance seems to be positive. A positive thought does not lead to a negative result, so check specifically how the thought feels. Sometimes when we're thinking about wanting something, we are actually feeling the lack of it. You may need to change even a positive-sounding thought of want until it actually leads to a positive feeling of having it and not the lack of it. As you think this thought, notice the increase in positive feeling. Then take action to prove this thought. You are providing evidence against the original belief by taking new action. You are actually doing evidence against it. More importantly, you are creating a new pattern by thinking a new thought, feeling a better feeling, and taking a different action. Let's go back to one of the previous examples. The thought was, "My boss doesn't like me because I threaten him." Let's find a better feeling thought. Here's one example. I'm likable, and I want to show up in a way I can feel proud of. So let's plug this into the model. The thought is, I'm likable, and I want to show up in a way that I'm proud of. When I think this thought, I feel encouraged. My action is to contribute in meetings when I genuinely feel I have something to offer the team. And the result is, people will know more about me and my work. This is a very likely result. Although there's no way to know what the result ultimately will be, playing out this model can break very old patterns just by taking new actions. When you think about the results you want in your life, you can work the model backwards to get to the thought work that's necessary. If the result you want is stated as, I want to have $1 million, then I can ask myself the following questions. What type of action will I take to make or manifest $1 million? What feelings would most help me take this action? What thoughts do I want to believe and think in order to create this feeling? Here are some new thoughts. I am capable of increasing my income significantly with this new job. Or, I know many people who are millionaires, and if they can do it, so can I. These thoughts may lead to feelings of being capable, excited, and passionate. Some actions caused by these feelings may be passing out business cards, hiring a publicist, creating a new website, writing a book, hiring a financial coach, running financial statements, getting on a budget, or starting to do more appearances to get clients. The ultimate result will be a plan in place to be a millionaire within 3 years following the current budget and income plans. It truly is this simple. Name the problem or issue, whether it's a thought, feeling, action, or result in your life, fill in the model, change the thought to one that will give you the feeling, action, result you want, and then take action to provide evidence for the new thought. Here is how I lost weight with this model. When I was overweight, I would think thoughts like, I will always have a weight issue. That caused me to feel defeated. The action that I did not take was no exercise, and the action that I did take was eating compulsively. The result is I gained weight or I maintained my overweight. When I changed my thoughts to get to my natural weight, a thought I had was, my body is wise and without me interfering has no problems. The feeling I got from that was trusting, relaxed, self-love, and hopeful. The action I took was exercising and eating when my body told me to and stopping when it told me to. The result was I lost 70 pounds and have maintained it for 6 years. The other piece to this, which I did not teach in the original class, is that sometimes the result is an additional thought. That's right. So you have a thought that leads to another thought that leads to another thought. Before you know it, you have a pattern of thought, an action that creates a result of a system of negative thinking and feeling. It looks like this. I have a thought, it causes a feeling, which causes an action, which causes a result, and the actual result is a thought, which leads me into the model again. Here's an example. The thought is, my boss doesn't like me because I threaten him. The feeling I have is insecure. The action is, I act quiet and reserved in meetings. The result thought is, nobody cares what I have to say because I'm threatening. The result in this case is actually an additional thought, which leads us into another model. Nobody cares about what I have to say because I'm threatening. Feeling insignificant. Action, avoid talking to coworkers. Result thought, I have no friends because I threaten them. Feeling sad. Action, don't go out or attend social functions. Result, isolation. Isolation feeds back into the three thoughts. I have no friends. Nobody cares what I have to say. And my boss doesn't like me. This is a classic belief system. It feeds on other thoughts, actions, and feelings. When you have patterns of thoughts that keep you thinking, I call it a belief system. A collection of belief systems is ultimately what makes you, you. It's your identity. Thoughts build on thoughts and provide evidence for each other. When you have a healthy, positive belief system, this is great news. When you have a negative belief system and you are getting consistently negative results in your life, it will take some thought unraveling to change to a better identity. That being said, remember that overwhelmed is just another feeling caused by a thought and does not need to derail your efforts. Just take one thought at a time, even when the thought is a result of another thought, and keep unwinding until you feel the relief of the better feeling. Remember the distinction I previously mentioned between a result and a circumstance. A result is something you have created in your life with your thinking. It can include manifestations from the law of attraction. But for the point of this model, I differentiate between circumstances that we don't have direct control over and the results which we do have direct control over. Here are some examples. Not having any friends. Result. A friend moving out of state. Circumstance. Having a job you hate. Result. Your company going out of business. Circumstance. Having a combative relationship with your son. Result. Having a son with behavioral issues. Circumstance. I don't want you to get too caught up in monitoring and managing your results. Sometimes the results you create now become circumstances you can't immediately control later, obesity being an example of this. But it's important to understand that the results in this model always prove the original thought that led to the feeling, action, result pattern.
Chapter 7, Common Questions.
What if I can't figure out what I'm feeling? Breathe. Sit still. Ask yourself if you feel more mad, glad, sad, or happy. This is more of an art than a science. You don't have to be too specific for this to work. If you feel negatively, it's worth doing the work to find the thought causing it. The more you get in touch with your body and the different vibrational frequencies that different thoughts cause, the more you'll be able to identify and name your feelings more specifically. Does thought always cause my feelings? Isn't it sometimes the feelings causing my thinking? Can a feeling just come over me? There are two ways we experience a feeling. One way is through physical sensations caused by involuntary physical response, and the other way is by our thinking. There are times when our feelings are a physical response that precedes our thought. In the example of being on a roller coaster, you may feel fear based on the stimuli of the height of the cart and the sensation of the movement. This feeling is a physical reaction that moves straight from the senses to the amygdala and then through the body without passing through the brain. But just seconds later, we process the stimuli through the brain and think a thought that either intensifies the fear, I'm going to die, or lessens the fear. This is just a ride and I'm going to be fine. This is fun. For the sake of this work, the most important distinction is an understanding that our thoughts, not our circumstances or other people, cause our feelings. Even with involuntary physical reaction, the feeling and vibration is intensified or lessened by our thought. Do we always want to change our feelings? Should we try to never feel a negative feeling? I believe some feelings that appear to be negative are completely appropriate. Grief, exhaustion, and pain are feelings I'm willing to feel on occasion. The thoughts that cause these emotions seem appropriate to me sometimes, and feeling these feelings all the way through is cleansing to me. I'm careful not to get stuck in the spin cycle of feeling negatively, but I do allow a cycle of feeling when it feels clean and human to do so. How do I work on this model when I'm at work or surrounded by people? It's kind of like practicing for a game. The more you practice this at home alone, the better you will get at doing it real time when you're with people. In the beginning, you may need to do the model work after the circumstance, but as you get better, you can redirect yourself during a circumstance. That's when it gets really fun. Is it important to always write it down? In the beginning, I recommend you write it down using a worksheet and get the thoughts on paper. I have many scraps of paper and napkins that I start by writing CTFAR. This can be done anywhere and gets the thought out of my head so I can see more clearly. Once you get better at it, you may be able to do it more quickly in your head. But for painful thoughts, I still write out and complete the entire model. Do I have to fill out the model with the new thought? Can't I just change the thought? The whole goal is to change the thought, and if it works for you just to create a new thought and believe it, then by all means do that. Most of us need to see the full effect of our thought and understand it deeply before we can create a whole new way of thinking. This model is a great tool for doing that quickly. You say that it's my thought causing the feelings, but what if it really is just my husband? He really does say negative things to me. I don't just think he does. It's never the husband. You can't outsource your feelings. His actions are caused by his feelings, and his thoughts cause his feelings, not yours. I believe that your husband says negative things to you, but I don't believe that what your husband says causes your feelings. What you think about what your husband says is what causes your feelings. If you believe him or think he is disrespecting you, or if you think he should be behaving in a way that's different from reality, you will feel pain. No one causes your feelings but you. I know it's hard to break the habit of thinking, he hurt my feelings, but that thought is always a lie. You hurt your feelings each and every time. Now, again, I'm not condoning his behavior or telling you to stay with a man who acts this way. I'm just telling you the truth, that you are the one who makes the choices of who you're going to spend your time with, listen to, and believe. If you choose him and you believe him, you hurt your feelings. Your model is very similar to another process I have used before. Can I use both? Of course, you can and should use anything that works for you. I have heard from many people that this model is very similar to other programs and processes, and I am not surprised because this really does work. Take from all your favorite teachers and tools and use the mixture that helps you best create the life you want. How is the new thought different from just an affirmation? It's not. An affirmation is really just an affirming thought. The main difference in the way it's presented here is that I don't recommend you use an affirmation that you don't believe. I do not believe in saying things that you aren't believing over and over again until you believe them. This has never worked for me. When I was heavier, I could say, "You are so skinny," all day long in my head, but it was always accompanied by the thought, "No, you're not," and so it caused a feeling of inadequacy, not peace. Can it really be this simple? I'm afraid this feeling of relief won't last. Take that thought and plug it into the model. If you believe it won't last, you will end up taking action to prove it true. Is it this simple? Yes. Easy? Not always. The feeling of relief is always just one thought away. What if I don't think my result proves my original thought? Then you don't have the correct thought for the result. The result will always prove the original thought. This is a common beginner's mistake. Sometimes we have so many thoughts at once that it's hard to find and pinpoint the thought creating the result. With practice, you will be able to identify the thought and its result as evidence for it quite easily. Can two different thoughts cause the same feeling? All my thoughts seem to cause me to feel hopeless all the time. Yes, many thoughts can cause the feeling of hopelessness or any other emotion. These thoughts will keep strengthening their own spin cycle and create evidence for each other. This is a negative belief system that is a web of negative thinking and feelings. Unravel each thought one at a time. As you continue to work through your negative beliefs, many of the supporting thoughts will simply fall away. Can we take action and change our results without changing our thoughts? Can we move up the model backwards? Yes, this can work, and I've seen it work, but this is definitely the hard way. It's much easier to change the thought and then take action to prove it true than to take action against a negative thought. But yes, it can be done. Just make sure you have truly changed the thought, or your new results will be temporary. I want my wife to use this model, but she won't. I can't do this alone. You can totally do this alone. You can't control your wife or her behavior, even though many of us do try. I have found the best way to inspire people to do this thought work is to show your life as an example. The results will speak for themselves. Are excuses the same as thoughts? Yes. Plug any excuse into the model and you will see the result it gets you. I find it hard to admit some of the thoughts I'm thinking. How can I get over this? Ask yourself why it is hard to admit your painful thoughts. This answer is a great thought to start with. Remember, you don't have to admit these thoughts to anyone but yourself. Also, one of the reasons some of us have a hard time admitting our thoughts is that we beat ourselves up for our thinking. This serves no purpose and has no upside. Try to be curious and kind when doing this work. Be a compassionate student of yourself. Know that there is a reason why you think the way you do, and it's okay. It's also okay to change your thoughts now. What if I want to feel a negative emotion? Sometimes you will, and sometimes it's completely appropriate to fully feel emotions commonly termed negative, such as grief, sadness, loss, loneliness, disappointment, and fear. I would never suggest you try to change your thoughts if you're not suffering. Feeling emotions cleanly through is not suffering. The key with any emotion is to feel it with awareness and notice the thoughts causing you to feel deeply. Typically, genuinely felt emotion, even negative emotion, passes naturally and gently when it's not caused by untrue thought. An example of this may be, I miss my dog Calvin, who passed away. This is a genuine and what I would call a clean thought that may cause clean negative emotion. This is not the same as a suffering thought that might be, if only I had paid better attention, he would not have drowned in the pool. This also causes negative emotion, but it's riddled with pain and guilt caused by an argument with reality and the past. I'm having a hard time with this. Can you coach me using this model? I can and do coach many clients, and I teach coaches how to coach using this model. But before you hire one of us, take your time and be willing to suck at this long enough to get good at it. In the beginning, you may struggle a bit with getting it on paper, but as you continue, my guess is that you will notice a huge shift in the way you see yourself and your own thinking. I get many emails per week from my students who are excited that they finally got it and now use the model daily in their lives with very little struggle. Forum discussion samples. These have been lightly edited to preserve privacy. Hi, Brooke. I haven't heard your audio class yet, but I've read your PDF materials. I apologize for the following long question, but this is an issue that continues to wreak havoc on my body and my mind. My question is, with regards to my personal problem, I seem to be able to identify my thoughts, and I'm trying to do the turnarounds. But I'm frustrated that I'm not seeing the results and actions that would best reflect a healthier relationship with myself. I have to write a dissertation, and I'm finding a deadening, dull feeling every time I sit down to write, despite having an outline and notes on what I want to say. I want that deadening feeling to go away. I want to be moved by the passion I have inside for the issues I'm engaging. Now at least I know that that deadening feeling is tied to a thought. I think the thought is that there is a good academic way to write and that I shouldn't do it badly. There is not one way to do good academic work. These turnarounds feel good and I'm motivated, but then I sit down and the deadening, dull feelings are still around. I've started to think I'm just lazy or I'm not supposed to do this work, but I know that the issues are important to me and I feel strongly about the field. Do you have any suggestions on how to best coach myself?
Hi, great question. Before I answer, I have to say I don't remember anyone ever telling me that they felt passionate and excited about writing a dissertation. I believe this is the reason many people don't actually complete them. Here is my suggestion. Don't fight the feeling of dread. When you start writing, plan on dread being your companion for a while. Get to know the texture of it. Have it be your writing buddy. I can feel that you are fighting the dread, and dare I say, dreading the dread. This will only add to the trouble you are having. You may not be able to do this for long periods of time, but maybe just plan on writing for 30 minutes with your new buddy Dread each day. I think you might be surprised what happens if you do this. It has worked beautifully for me in many things I have wanted to have done but didn't want to do. By not dreading the dread, you are removing one layer of negativity. This is a great place to start.
I love it. Thanks, Brooke. You have a way of understanding that is incisive and cuts through to me. I absolutely dread the dread. I pine away. Okay, I'm going to give this new exercise a try. Hi, Brooke. I absolutely love your work. I have your Coach in a Box set and have also listened to your Self-Coaching 101 class. I'm really doing the work. My issue is that I'm overly concerned with what people think of me, especially at work. My coworkers are not my tribe, so to speak. They are very conservative and have different lifestyles than I do. I find that I'm extremely uncomfortable many times at work and worry about every little thing that I say. It definitely adds to my anxiety level, which in turn drives me to overeating and overdrinking. Do you have any suggestions for me on how to break out of this negative thinking pattern? I would just like to care less about what they think and care more about what I think. Thank you again for your awesome teaching. Okay, so let's play this out the worst case scenario. What if everyone at work thinks you're horrible in whatever way that would worry you the most? What would that mean to you? Also, when you watch what you're saying at work, are you trying to convince yourself that you can control what they think of you by what you say? Is there any part of you that thinks you can control them? How does it feel to try and control them? Hi, Brooke. Thanks for your reply. Here are my answers. What if everyone at work thinks I'm horrible? It would mean that I wasn't good enough somehow, that my suspicions are confirmed, that I don't measure up. Okay, that uncovered a pretty powerful belief right there. Wow. Also, when you watch what you're saying at work, are you trying to convince yourself that you can control what they think of you by what you say? Is there any part of you that thinks you can control them? How does it feel to try and control them? And the answer to the first question is absolutely yes. I think I can control what they think of me by watching every little word I say. I guess I must think I can control them, which is an illusion. I can't control them. I can't control anyone. I want to be able to control them because I'm afraid of not being liked. I'm afraid of confirming my beliefs that I'm not good enough. So I obsessively watch what I say and beg them to like me in some not-so-subtle ways in order to stay safe. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but it does feel like I'm fighting a losing battle. I think now I have to find a belief. One that says, I'm good enough, no matter if people like me or not. I've lived with the old one for a very long time. If everyone thinks you're horrible, it does not mean that you aren't good enough. It means that they think you're horrible. It tells us about them, not you. If you act in a certain way so they will like you, they don't even like you. They like who you're pretending to be. If you think you aren't good enough, you will look for evidence to prove your belief, and you will find it. If you believe you are good enough, you don't need any evidence. People look to you to see how to treat you. How do you treat yourself? When people beg me to like them, I tend to like them less. I can't like them enough to make up for them not liking themselves. Being liked is an inside job. Being enough is already done. You just haven't noticed. You are good enough. Period. Hi, Brooke. Thank you for the class. It was excellent and right to the point. Okay, I have a few questions. Question 1. If the only moment we have is now, why do we use laws of attraction to wish for things in the future? For example, I will be a millionaire when I'm 50 years old. Isn't it contradictory? The only moment we have is now, and the reason we use the law of attraction is to align our thinking in this moment in order to attract the reality we want.
How we think and feel now is what determines what we have in the future. We must feel as if we have it now in order to create it in our lives. So even though it feels like we are in the future, the law of attraction is really about how we feel in this moment now. The feeling is what brings the attraction and manifestation. Once we have stated our desire to the universe, should we think about it every day to reinforce the feeling of already having it, or just let it go, as mentioned in Martha Beck's Love List, and let the universe work for us? You can think about what you want and then let it go if you really believe it's coming. You will know that you can let it go because it feels good to know that you don't ever have to worry about getting it. You already feel as though you have it. So when it actually manifests, it is just a bonus. But if you notice you still have some doubt that you will get it, you can do the thought work daily in order to align with the feeling that will ultimately attract it. I was asking my 60-year-old mother what she wants to change in her life. She said she would like to be able to make more money because she's now economically dependent on her children. Should I tell her that she can manifest the wealth if she believes it, or should I challenge her belief that she needs more money? I suggest you challenge her belief and then tell her she can have it if she wants it and if she truly believes she needs it. Do we have to feel abundant first to attract what we want in our life? What about many debt-ridden people who have spent money at will and never felt that money is scarce until they cannot pay their mortgage? Debt-ridden people are not abundant. They spend more than they have in order to fill some void birthed out of some scarcity. Going into debt unconsciously is not the same as living from a place of connected abundance. Reading your discussions with a previous client reminds me of a story a friend told me. She works in an advertising agency, leading a team on the creative side. One colleague is obviously not up to the challenge of his tasks. His designs never convey the message the clients want, and everyone in their team was unhappy about his performance. However, this colleague is a very happy person. He's probably never doubted that he is good enough and never realized that his designs were not meeting the expectations of his clients. My question is, if we totally ignore what people think about us and just feel good about ourselves, do we lose contact with reality sometimes, just like this design guy? And how should my friend communicate with his colleague if he cannot believe that his work is not good enough for the clients? This is a good example to consider. Knowing we are good enough does not mean we're not aware of our work or open to feedback. In fact, just the opposite is true. People who have a deep sense of themselves can be very aware and open to feedback because they do not confuse negative work or project feedback with their own sense of worth. You don't have to totally ignore what other people think about you, but using their opinion of you, not your work, as a reason to think you're not good enough is seeking evidence for a lie that serves no one. Confusing quality of work with quality of a person is not what I meant to suggest in our conversation with the previous client at all. Two very different things. Does that make sense to you? Would love to hear your thoughts. Hi, Brooke. I just listened to Self-Coaching 101. Thanks so much for making it available. I do have a question. In the example of someone saying, "I hate my job," you said there are two options, change the job or change the thought. Although I suspect changing the thought may always be appropriate in some way, aren't there also times when changing the circumstance is indicated? How does one know when to do which? Thanks. Hi, great question. Always work the thoughts first. When you clean up your thoughts, you may find that you want to change your job, but you aren't deluding yourself into believing that your feelings come from your job or any other external source. It is not that you change your job and then feel better, as it may seem. What happens is you change your job, your thoughts change, and then you feel better. So you attribute feeling better to the job. This is a mistake. By understanding that your thoughts determine your feelings, you don't have to change your job to feel better. But you can change your job if you want a different job. Make sense? Yes, it does make sense to clean up the thoughts first. Among other things, it assures that I'm not responding from a sense of desperation. Thanks for the answer. Hi, Brooke. Greetings from a college student in Hawaii. I just finished your book and have to say it is the best weight loss book I've ever read, and I've read a lot of them. Your approach to it is exactly what I think so many of us need, but it's often overlooked because many of us think it's a willpower issue. Anyway, I listened to your coaching class and had a question. How do we change a thought to something more positive if we aren't sure it's true, or if we are proven wrong? For example, I'm having problems changing my thoughts about my ex-boyfriend. Although I don't want to be together with him, I still feel sad that he isn't trying to contact me. My thoughts are, this is not bothering him at all, and he's over me. My feelings are hurt and unwanted. My actions are, I don't contact him either. So my question is, how do I change that thought so I can truly believe it if it's not true? Thank you so much. Hi, this is a great question to demonstrate finding the exact thought that's causing you pain. The thought I see here that's painful is, my ex-boyfriend has not contacted me. This is a circumstance. The thought is, I am unwanted. The feeling is hurt. The action is you don't contact him, and the result is you don't speak with him, which helps prove your original thought. So all the work needs to be done on the thought, I am unwanted. This is the thought that needs work. Can you find a better feeling thought that's truer? I know lots of people who want to contact me. I want to contact me. I want me. If my ex-boyfriend contacted me, it wouldn't mean that I was want-worthy. His contacting me would tell me more about his thoughts leading to the action of calling me and less about my worth. I am not contacting him, and I don't want to be with him, but that doesn't mean he's unwanted.
Conclusion.
Your mind is a tool to use as you wish. Your mind does not have to be the one running the show. The part of you that watches your mind is a much better master and is aligned with your true intentions for this life. We may not understand our exact purpose for being alive, but we do know that feeling good makes the journey better. As you use the self-coaching model, you will learn how to think deliberately. You are not just learning how to dissolve a painful thought, but also how to create a new one that feels better and leads to different results. As you practice this, what you are really doing is practicing how to think. Practice your thinking. Lead your mind. You may never have heard this before. You may never have thought of thinking as something you can get good at, but it is. The more you practice, the better you will get at deliberately thinking good-feeling thoughts. As you feel better, you will take better action and get better results. I had a client once tell me that she thought I was faking being so happy. This made me laugh out loud. I am not faking being happy. I don't have to. I'm genuinely happy. I do work at it by managing my thoughts and consciously deciding what I choose to think so I can create a cycle of joy in my life. It has been a magical journey for me. I will never be able to go back to feeling out of control of my life or my joy. I know that I'm always just one thought away from relief. Some days it feels appropriate to be experiencing sadness or grief, and on those days I acknowledge my feelings and feel them deeply and fully. I know the thoughts causing them, and I still want to experience each and every feeling. This is very different than the suffering that comes from not knowing what is causing my feeling and trying to fight against myself. It feels clean and true and whole. When I live my life like this, the negative feeling states don't last very long, and for the duration of their vibration in my body, I notice they aren't as painful as they used to be. But on most days, I am now filled with a deep sense of joy and peace. I laugh really hard quite often and smile at my luck every chance I get. It is my hope that this model will help you start your journey towards this type of joy for yourself. I have learned so much from my teachers, and if I can help anyone else by sharing what I know, I'm even more blessed than I imagined. So find any place in your life that you don't believe is perfect and plug that thought into the model. Do it again and again until one day you can't remember the last time you were filled with anxiety. You are one thought away from the feeling you want. Get it.
Copyright 2009 by Brooke Castillo. All rights reserved. For more information, visit www.brookecastillo.com or email brooke@coach4weight.com.